Okay, so first order of business is approval of the minutes of June 1st.
I'll make a motion to approve the June 2nd minutes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carried. And we have a great group of guests here tonight. So we're going to just go on in a minute, and I'd like her to be here for your presentation, right? But why don't you go around and introduce yourself?
Okay. I'm Anne-Marie Belfilio, and I'm the Occupational Therapy Coordinator at the Northeast Center for Rehabilitation and Brain Injury.
I'm Paula Kendos-Carberry, Director of Social Work for the same facility.
Julie Cole, Director of Medical Records for Northeast Center.
And Seth Ram, the Administrator in Northeast Center.
I mean, you're the big cheese.
What they tell me.
The big shot. The big
he's a man.
What?
Are
you
yeah, thank you, Carl. That's a good idea. All right.
Chris Allen, County Legislator, District 2, Sargers and Mountain. I'm Carl Belfilio, District 8, Silvers.
I think Anne-Marie.
Anne-Marie.
And I represent Kingston. So, you know, I recall when we first applied for funds for that Northeast Center, that's how far back I go. And when Danny Alfonso was chair and we all met over there, and it was just a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, got a lot of funding for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to have some minutes around to be signed? Do you want to wait?
It should be. Oh, yeah.
This is Erica Guerin also. She's our legislative counsel.
Okay,
I just wondering, you know, who she is. She'll be in, doing a lot of inputting.
Are you hanging around? If we do anything wrong, she enters us. She's a gentle. This is Don Gregorius, our legislator from
Woodstock.
And we have Lee King with us, who represents the League of Women Voters.
That would be Legislator Maloney.
Do you have that area?
I think Jim has that actually, that part though, Lake of Dreams.
No.
There you go.
We had a picture here with both of them.
Right.
And we are.
Well, they had a meeting Thursday with Dean and the nursing home administrator and the staff on another issue related to the state DOT. You want to just mention what it was?
I can.
Briefly.
Actually, we met with Dean because we have part of our program is the community access program, and we have our patients, we call them neighbors, so that they feel that they're more part of a neighborhood. But they're in the community, you know, 3 to 5 days a week, people who are getting ready to discharge into the Medicaid waiver program. And so they spend a lot of time out at the malls and out shopping the stores, and we have neighbors that are doing volunteer positions in the community. So they're utilizing the bus system. They use UCAT. They use the city buses to get to various places. And they are experiencing some challenges trying to get across 9W. So we asked Dean if he would come and meet with us, and we took pictures of the crossings that we were concerned about. And it can take, if you took the bus to do a loop around, you know, to get to the other side of the street, it's like an hour and a half to get yourself. It's incredible the amount of time that it takes. So we have well-bodied people who are able to get back and forth across the street. We had a young man who met with Dean who, you know, explained, here he is, he's completely well-bodied, even though he's had a brain injury. And he had to run across the street, and he's scared to death doing that.
So,
across the major highway.
Yeah, 9W. Like, if you want to go from Barnes and Nobles up to Marshall,
there's
no light.
There's no light, but there's no crosswalk.
We're talking, like, 5 to 7 lanes of traffic that people have to make their way through safely. And not even just people from Northeast Center, but also people from the community at large are struggling to get back and forth out there. There's a lot of folks, apparently, that are using the UCAT system to get back and forth to work. So they're working in the strip mall.
So is that the, is that a state road?
It's a state road.
Yeah, but
they have a, if you do crosswalk, you could put, they have a state wall, you know, where they put up those things that say pedestrian.
Yep. Yeah, well, so Dean, you know, Dean works for the highway department, so he's very knowledgeable about how to get those kinds of things done. He offered to go to the town and ask for a resolution for those improvements so that we can send to the state, and then spoke to us about putting together letters from both the neighbors and, you know, from employees about employees like myself who work for community access. We're trying to get people with brain injury back into the community, living a full, meaningful life, and you know, we're here to death just trying to get those skills.
Do you know who's the superintendent of public works for the town?
I don't.
You ask the state to grant you permission to place those state signs, you know, with the crosswalks. And you have to pay for them, so it's a town issue.
Will Dean offer to do that as a result of the meeting that we had?
Yeah, well, the person you want to contact, his name is Keith Avery, his telephone number is 331.
I think we have time to do the presentation.
Yes.
The big cheese. Are you the number one? Are you kicking me off?
There's also something in Sarbanes, on this, maybe Town of Ulster has a similar, their Safe Streets Advisory Committee, and it's run through Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Okay.
And it was a recent advent and change in the criteria used for federal funding to make highway improvements. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand came to Sarbanes like May of last year to speak about it. And it had to do with, because Sarbanes, we had 13, in 2013, we had 13 pedestrian automobile accidents, and it was two fatalities.
Right.
So they chose Sarbanes as a community to come to, and she spoke at Cahill Elementary School like in May of 2014.
Yeah.
So federal money can go towards making an intersection or a street or highway safer for the specific and intent purpose of pedestrian safety. So there's advisory committees set up on the county level, and there's one in Sarbanes, they meet once a month. So that's an issue, like whatever the companion type advisory committee in the town of Ulster would be something to look into, to bring it up with them too, and then they can, you know, at least discuss it at their meetings. But it sounds like Dean's strategy is pretty good too, you know, so that way you could tackle it.
Absolutely.
Three,
we're
going to
need every support that we can get.
Phillips County Transportation Council would be, because they're part of the planning board also. Because you're going to need more than just crosswalks there and signs. You actually get, you know, you need a staggered red and green light so that you have the availability of people to cross when no cars are coming. Right now, you don't have that.
And then taking into consideration that there's handicapped people. We have people also that are in wheelchairs.
Right.
That they need to do that community access as well. So the young man that came to the meeting on Friday, you know, he's a well-bodied person. We have many people that are in power wheelchairs. And I understand, like, some 10 years ago, there actually was someone who was run over in a power chair out there.
Wow.
Well, you started at the right place. I mean, Dean was right. Well, I'm sure he'll follow through, and then maybe he'll have a conversation with Dean.
Anything you need to help us with.
I mean, what Keith will do is he'll take the information, and then he'll go to the regional office, to the traffic department.
Okay.
Perfect. Traffic will send somebody out to take a look at it and study it.
Okay.
And if it qualifies, though, yeah, it's
sure.
A number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Pretty much.
Welcome.
I came to talk about the Northeast Center, really, about the primary health care, the best health care center in Ulster County, in my view. I came to talk about some of the things, you know, Northeast Center, as Jeanette was speaking about earlier, is it's been around since 1999. I took a tour there when I was a level 2 OT student. I was working out at St. Francis Hospital, and that was my field trip. And I walked into that center, and I think there might have been one or two patients at the facility at that time. And it was September of 99. And I was just in awe when I walked into the center of, you know, what a wonderful place that it was and everything that it was built to be and to offer to the brain injury community. First of all, it's the largest brain injury center in New York State and maybe
in the country.
In the country, right? Okay. So the populations that we serve out there are really diverse. So we, even though we are a brain injury center, we also have a 40-bed ventilator-dependent unit out there. So people with respiratory failure for one reason or another, it could be, you know, an acute illness that caused that system to break down, and they are living out there and they're on vents. And we work very hard to rehabilitate that 40-bed unit. We get a lot of people back out. We wean them off of the ventilator. We get them, you know, maybe, transition them to the medically complex unit and then transition them through rehabilitative services back into the community, back home to their families. Our medically complex unit looks kind of similar to a skilled nursing facility would in the sense that you get all kinds of, you get strokes, you get multi-traumas, we're weaning people from trachs in the middle over there. We get short-term rehab, which is what you would see like in a Tempur Commons or in a Golden Hill, and they're in there for short-term rehabilitation. But the crux of what we do really is in our brain injury rehabilitation. We have neuro rehab units one, which is our admissions unit. They're single rooms, and we bring folks in, and we kind of isolate them in their own room to find out who they are and how they're going to interact with our facility and our neighbors in our facility. And then we figure out where they would best be suited based on their abilities. Some folks have a lot of negative behaviors after a brain injury, so we kind of don't know where they're going to go, and, you know, so we get that all figured out, and then we move them on to those other, onto those other units.
180 brain injury deaths right now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Is that an increase, or was it always that?
No, it's increased. Originally, there were 60, or there was...
There was, well, I believe originally there was 40, and we increased it to 60.
Because we used to have spinal cord injury.
Correct. And then
we had two units.
That 4 years ago, to 180.
Yeah. And that includes veterans, too, right?
Veterans?
You just met with the veterans of Hudson Valley to set up a contract with them. Able to veterans. You know, we do have veterans, but if, you know, contracting with veterans, so, you know, with the organization itself, it allows us to take a greater number of with veterans benefits.
Yeah, I remember years ago, not too many years ago, Maurice Hinchy, there was a big press conference there having to do with veterans.
We have one person came.
It was from that time.
Wow.
And like Seth said, that today we did meet with them, and they're very interested in, because there's very few long-term beds for the veterans.
Great.
So
specifically vent beds.
Right, yeah, there's a huge need for the vent beds.
There's four of them in New York State, long-term vent beds.
In the Bronx.
Really?
Okay. And those are VA hospitals?
Yeah, they're in VA facilities.
So VA facilities.
I'm sorry.
I was just talking about how wonderful we are. So back to being wonderful. So we do. I worked at the Northeast Center in 2000, and what always concerns me about the Northeast Center is that when you talk to people in the community and you say you work at Northeast Center, and they still have that like, poor you work at the Northeast Center. Really, what I'm here to do is to invite the legislature to come and visit us and find out what all of our services are, what a beautiful facility that we have, the friendliness and the kindness that goes on amongst not only with the neighbors, but staff to staff as well, is that we have something really good and gorgeous going on out there. And I want it to shine the way that it should. And I figured a good place to start would be here to talk with you guys. Come out and see what we do. And then when your constituents are referring to you about where to go, you could say, hey, Northeast Center is a great place to go for rehabilitation, because we not only want to take people in from outer areas that can't get a bed because they've had a brain injury, but we'd also like to serve our immediate population. We have great rehabilitative services out there. In our rehab department, I can speak to my department, we have over 140 years of experience just in the OT department, cumulatively, with our time. Some of these folks that I'm working with, doing rehabilitation with, I've known them almost my entire career. The therapist with the least amount of experience is the gal who went to take her OT exam today. Everybody else, honestly, has got like 15 or 20 years under their belt. And we've seen how it's been done in places where they're just, you know, banging the 100 days, get the money's worth. We're interested in doing good rehabilitative care. And we get people back home to their families that come in really banged up with a vision that other rehabilitation folks don't know about, because that's what we're experiencing, is the time that it takes to rehab a brain injury. Right? It takes a whole lot more than 100 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that vision, and we have the experience to get the job done. It is a specialty. And
we're also getting people from other parts of the state who eventually come to live in Ulster County. They come in, many of them, with the shirt on the back. No benefits, no sight of where I'm going or what's going to happen with me. They come from, fragmented, tight family situations. So we start from scratch. Literally, we start people, we get them on Social Security disability if they're eligible, SSI benefits. They come in with no Medicaid, many of them. And I don't know if anybody's ever done a Medicaid application, but now you need to go 5 years back and collect all of your... So here you're living, out in the street. How do you collect 5 years of your stuff? So it's like piecing, and then they have no recollection. They have no family contacts. So it's kind of putting this person back together on, how are we going to successfully get them back into their community or a new community?
How would they know where to go?
They're
how do they get to the north?
They usually wind up in an acute setting. We talked about, motor vehicle accidents or a drug overdose or a stroke.
Okay.
They wind up in the emergency room. Okay. They may transition into an acute ICU or... and then step down and then maybe go to a Helen Hayes or a Sunnybrook, I suppose. And, go into that, but, you can speak to that. The intensity of those programs, a lot of people can't sustain, 6 hours of therapy a day if there are horrific
accident. Mm-hmm. So it's like, let's send them to a nursing home. And you can send them to mom and pop nursing home, but when you're 20 or 40,
nobody wants it.
Yeah. And what our program focuses on that really no other rehab program focuses on is the cognitive component. So rehab and, you know, Anne-Marie and her team is your PT, your OT, and your speech. But it goes way beyond that with a brain injury. And that's where the cognitive rehab comes into play. And, you know, we have a team of special educators, and that's what they focus on, social interaction, socialization, getting people ready to get back into the community, not just physically but mentally as well. There's a lot of people who come in, I mean, they don't have banking skills, they don't have social skills, they don't know how to pick up the mail or how to balance a checkbook, and that's something that we focus on, and that's a big part of what we do. And that's really what separates us from that mom-and-pop nursing home where, you know, even though they may be, you know, physically ready to go, cognitively they may not be. That's a big part of what we do.
And one of the things you mentioned was like heroin overdose patients.
We have so many people in our facility.
We're seeing a huge portion of that.
In about the past year.
Oh, yeah. They just lost the charge. The heroin overdose?
Yeah.
The heroin overdose people, they have no more bilateral integration. This is gone.
Yeah.
Your ability to call us midline, move over here, it doesn't happen. These people are like this. To try to eat, the arm comes out like this. These big wide movements, dig the fork in. I do a lot of feeding programs. I can't even tell you. It's horrible what happens because as a result of heroin. It'd be so nice for the awareness program for them to be able to come in and take a tour to see this is what happens when you do heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Arctic Coalition against narcotics, too.
I mean, any of the county programs that are, you know, would benefit to come in and take a tour and see what it is that happens as a result.
Some of our neighbors, I think, would probably like to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, the need is so great. We have, you know, it's not a formal inpatient treatment program, but we provide services through an OASIS program called Step One. And they provide inpatient services to our neighbors that need it. And you may know how many are enrolled, but...
That's 60. And these are diagnosed, people who've been diagnosed with stuff. But there's a lot of them who later on say, oh, yeah, I used to do this. Mm-hmm. And now look at where I am and I need help. So they're pretty much open to anything.
And we can put numbers together of how many of our admissions were directly related to a drug overdose. I mean, I don't think we have that off the top of our head, but we can pull that data to give you guys an idea.
Well, I'd definitely like to see or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because we know that there's been a terrible problem with heroin.
But your patients come throughout the state and even out of the state, right?
Across the country.
But it's out of control in our county.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we got to get some sort of a grasp on it because it's just, you know, I admitted a 21-year-old on her birthday, her 21st birthday, from a heroin addiction and an overdose.
There's no magic answer to that.
No,
but it affects anybody and anyone and any social aspect of your life. So.
Yeah.
Since I want to sound fast at 18 or 19.
Yeah.
It's a thing to see people in their 50s come in with it too. You know, it's like it skipped a generation or it wasn't popular and then now it's out there, it's cheap and people are starting to use.
It doesn't have the same stigma as whenever you have
No, you're a hardcore drug user when you use heroin. Now it's like
it's the drug of choice.
And
you don't have to
shoot it.
No.
One of the things that, I'm also on the Ulster Prevention Council, and they feel that what had happened over the years is that with the other Oxycontin, the prescriptions that these people were hooked on, and now it's harder for them to get because the pharmacies won't take large prescriptions anymore. I guess it's state. It's a state law now. So the doctors aren't prescribing as many pills for their patients. So they either sell the pills that they got or buy heroin, or if they're on something like Suboxone or another, I guess Suboxone is the only other thing besides, methadone, that they can sell. And they shoot up heroin because it is cheaper, and I think that's where the epidemic has come from. I think we've actually created it. You made it worse by denying them the pills, and they're taking the powder.
Yeah, it's cheaper. Yeah, cheaper. I saw a piece on cable news network where they did, like hour-long expose, investigative reports, and they were focusing on New England and, I think of the other state that was Delaware, where they had some serious problems with both the pill addiction and heroin, and they're both, it's interrelated because it's just like what Legislator Bill Figlio said, that the pills aren't available anymore, and once they crack down on the availability of the pills, then for the heroin is more easily accessible. I was speaking to somebody in a restaurant in Sarbanes just the other night, and he had come back to visit for 4th of July, and he had said that five of his friends from high school, he was like in his early 30s, he said had serious overdoses, and he didn't specify, but it sounded like some of them had died. Mm-hmm. And he said that like Sarbanes is like, riddled with this heroin addiction problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
yeah, so
something that's more prevalent.
Last week, a young woman was found in the bathroom.
I actually had a discussion with the chief of police about it on July 4th because I was just, the day or two after I spoke to this gentleman, and he said that he had heard that it's more easily accessible on Sarbanes High School to get heroin than it is to get pot. That's what he said. He said it wasn't like that.
I don't know
if that's true or not, but no, exactly. But I was a little skeptical when I heard it, but, he claims that this is the case. He was explaining.
Sounds like it's out there.
Let's get back to the Energy Center.
Okay.
And so, Herb, do you have any questions?
We really appreciate your report. I mean, it's quite detailed.
What we would like to do is have you guys out for a tour, and not just for this committee, but for anyone on the legislature that would like to come out for a tour with us. We're going to try to put together some dates.
Well, that I would recommend that you contact the court of the legislature.
Sure.
And as far as this committee, I'd be all for that. That would be up to the chair.
Right.
And unfortunately, he wasn't able to be here tonight. But I'm sure he would be, certainly he could probably relate a lot to
sure.
what you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I did speak to Craig over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Can I make a suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to contact the clerk of the legislature to set up dates, I'll also have UCAN. I'll ask Lou Klein, the chairman of UCAN, we'll ask Vicki to send out an email to all the legislators and invite them.
Yeah,
so
we have
absolutely.
A date.
Mm-hmm. It would be preferable in the after, business hours, because most of us legislators work during the day.
Sure.
It would be hard to assemble a big group during the day and at night.
Well, I think that would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thanks
for having us.
You're welcome to stay if you'd like for the rest of the meeting, or not, we will not be attending.
I have a quick question. Do you have any cranial osteopaths in your clinic?
We do have a therapist who does craniosacral therapy.
Yeah,
is that what you're looking for? I do know a lady. I can get her information.
Yeah, no, I was just curious because it's an area. I've had a lot of concussions myself, and I've got some issues going down to see a specialist that actually I've been too busy with just different things, whether she's down in the top training facility for cranial osteopathy is at St. Barnabas Hospital in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
and then you have to be a doctor of osteopathic medicine to receive it. It's Dr. Hugh Edinger. Hope she comes back. That's definitely
right.
Well, the one thing too is that anytime I bring it up to people, they have a negative reaction.
Well, because
they had a lot of bad press years ago.
Yeah, and it was quite bad. You know, so it's nice to see that they're trying to change that.
Yeah. I'm surprised that's the biggest trauma center in the state.
You know, because that's how Tony Dwyer was able to get that. It took a long time, I'm telling you. That was a dream of his.
Yeah.
And I remember it very well, being there when we sat around a table like this. And I think I was the minority leader at the time because Danny was the chair. And he told us about what his, dream basically was. And all those statistics that there were no place for people to go with brain injury. And he was able to get them up. Actually, Lorraine Salmon, is that how you pronounce her way of saying? She is now with Cleveland College. She was one of the original people involved with it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, it's a tough client, patient that they take care of. Okay, so let's move on to the resolutions. So the first one is resolution 259, and this is the Coalition Against Narcotics is requesting a 60-day extension to get their report to the county legislature. Do I hear a motion?
I'll move it.
Resolution 267. Authorizes the legislature to execute an agreement with SUNY Albany School of Social Welfare for the continuation of the Master's in Social Work and Internship Program.
For discussion. Second. So it's an internship program through the college that the interns come to social services and do their case work or whatever you want to call it, their case study. But we fund that, right?
No, state social, okay.
State aid, social services, and miscellaneous contractual expenses, okay. Great.
Any other discussion? We're trying to do this right. And professional. All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Next one is Resolution 268. And this is to amend the 2015 county budget to accept funds for the Virginia State Office of Children and Family Services to fund a collaboration of behavioral health and child protective services. This is also a social service. Motion. Second. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 269 authorizes the chairman of the legislature to execute an amendment to the contract with the New York State Department of Environmental Protection to continue delegation of administration of Section 1838 of the Watershed Regulations.
Oof, I'll move it. Second.
Discussion?
I don't know what Section 18238 is. I wish we had backup.
Well, there is backup, and it's my understanding that this is the health department has always had the contract. This is a long-term contract, and they've helped with inspections. I kind of wrote that.
Septic systems in the watershed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, the inspection.
Yeah.
Well, approval. So they approve of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah,
there is a letter that, as part of the backup, is that this is an extension of the current contract that's been in place since the 90s. And I understand from a letter to the commissioner that they are actually renegotiating the contract. So I believe that there'll be another contract coming before the committee at some point in time, according to this April 30th letter. I have not been able to talk to the county attorney about it, but right now it seems like they want to have hold the status quo so until they can renegotiate the terms. So
we do the inspections, and they pay us to do them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Adopted. Okay, we have Resolution 287, approves the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county. Madeline Mesa, and this is Department of Social Services. This is to work in collaboration with the Child Protective Services Unit.
Okay. This is the contract that goes for the clinician that you're approving to accept the funds from the state. This is, they go hand in glove.
Okay.
Right.
Motion?
So it's just motion to
move it.
Move it.
Second.
Child Protective Services Unit to assess adults with alcohol, substance abuse, and or mental health issues. Behavioral health clinician to work in collaboration with Child Protective Services mm-hmm. Unit to assess adults with alcohol. All right, so somebody gets written up for questionable parenting skills or something, and they bring this person to assess the parents.
I think an
artist. Oh, you know, I read the contract, and now I'm totally drawing a blank. Carl,
there are some instances where parents will see, say, their child under supervision,
right,
or under special, you know, maybe an hour or two, and
like supervised visitation.
Yeah, supervised.
No, it's not. Actually, no. You know what? I'm totally. I just read it, and I'm totally drawing the blank. Isn't that terrible?
On the abstract.
Yep.
Right. Behavioral health is to work in collaboration with Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
Then you're Child Protective Services. That's
it. Thank you.
So parents or legal guardians
that have friends. Yes, yeah. And I'm so this is terrible. So she's, let's see. She works for the CPS caseworkers in the field, and they identify families and provide direct consultation who might benefit from behavioral health services. Screening to provide early identification of behavioral needs. You have a lot of input, experience with such things, but you know when they're not interacting properly, there's issues in the family. Psychoeducation, formal education training to DSS staff. That's some of the things that they did.
Sexual services. Mm-hmm. I was the director of temporary assistance.
Sorry. But they do clinical assessments and documentation to support the CPS process. Knowledge and resources within the community provide referrals to identify children and adults who may need ongoing services.
And the person they hired, I believe, speaks Spanish,
too, I think. Yes. I first think
about that. Oh, it's only one person?
Yeah, it's one person. It's valid. That's messed up.
I thought that was the only person.
It's about the behavioral thing, Carl. It's not about the... talking to a lawyer, but these are behavioral things that go along with the family. I mean, again, I read all of the contracts, and a lot of these contracts, services that are provided by our vendors are simple things of teaching people how to cook, take garbage out, buy groceries. You know, so these things all kind of go into play, too, is like, how is the family interacting? Do they need additional services? What do the children need? I mean, basic care of taking care of children. A lot of people don't know how to do basic needs for their children. So there's a whole series of things that we provide as a county to our residents.
If anyone would like a copy of the contract, we should have them send it.
Okay.
Already.
That's a behavioral thing, not so much.
I know, but it's
I mean, you
know. I hate that.
I know. So many emails. And then I get over up these passes one at a time, and then it's answered. He's doing a great job.
Hold on just a minute. I'm sorry. I'm going to be in contact for our resources. He's still there. Well, that's what this contract is. She'll be working with them.
More so than the social worker. She's a clinician.
All in favor?
Aye.
Carrie.
Carrie.
Old business.
Any old business?
Yes, I have something for old business.
I'm very disappointed because for 3 months I've been asked in every meeting, and you all have agreed that you're all going to support the safe staffing bill that was up in London. And I'm disappointed. I was promised it definitely would be here this month, and it's not. I'll write it up myself.
I thought that the chairman was going to draft that. That was my understanding.
Well, obviously he hasn't. So if you would please do me a favor and check with him, and if he doesn't have the time, certainly I think I expect you to work with you. If you please, it's not that difficult. I mean, you know, just because I think if we still, you know, and I probably should have brought it up tonight with these individuals that are here tonight. If you talk to any nursing home, any hospital, you will have, I doubt you have anybody that doesn't understand that there's a short staff nursing in any of those facilities. And that's because New York State doesn't have a mandate for how many nurses should be for so many patients. So these are places that take terrible advantage of that. And I know it's not going to pass now because they're out of session, but they go back.
Right.
You know, they should go back, and at least, you know, we could start the ball rolling. Some towns have done it. Other counties have already passed, support. So I just have to say I'm disappointed if not in this month, and I'll have to wait another month, but that's 4 months to try to get something in that really is very, very important.
Yes, and they came twice for us, really.
They're working hard. But I will call them and tell them, maybe I'll just say was on vacation or something, we missed a date. Mm-hmm. But I'll definitely promise to have enough for next month. Any new business?
I would be remiss if I didn't mention this because we are on the health committee. Last week there were allegations by the Golden Hill Family Council about it was in the paper.
It is not from our family council. Those comments that you read were from people that came to a meeting. I happened to have missed that one, but I just came from a family council meeting
about 3 days ago.
Okay.
The unfortunate part there was somebody, and one of the women that is on the family council is used to work there on the county elder.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not offered a position. She gave a quote to the paper that no nurse's aides want to go.
Do you guys know what we're talking about, though? Because I didn't finish really saying that. Let me just give them the groundwork first, because they don't know what we're talking about. Last week's Freeman, there were quotes in the Freeman from family council members, because that's what it said in the paper, that there was basically short staffing issues at Golden Hill and quality of care issues with the CNAs. So that's basically what we're talking about. Now, Jeanette, just explain.
Yeah, I'm a member of family council, and like I said, the chair of the committee is, I can't remember her last name, but they're absolutely shocked and feel betrayed, because there were a couple people that came in that sat in the back of the room, refused to sign in their name, and started complaining all about a care of a particular, one of them had a mother there, and then this one member of the family council did give a quote, and she said that somehow or other, she does intake with nurse's aides. Now, that annoys me, because here's somebody talking very bad about care, and yet you're the one that the nurse's aides are going to sign up for where they might want to work. So you know she's got to be part of that. But however, at the meeting she says, well, I told them not to, and I'm going to be very honest with you, the conversation, I told them not to use my name. And so I said, well, it doesn't matter that they used your name. Did you say that? Did you make that comment? And she wouldn't respond, but she did. She did. The other people were not identified. I had no idea who they were. There was a reporter, as I understand, from Mid-Hudson News that was invited. And the family council president and the vice president were alerted later on in the day that there was going to be press there. But there's nothing to hide. I mean, the meeting is open to all family members. And so they decided to go on with the meeting anyway. But I will only tell you that they're not having any more difficulties than any hospital or other nursing home is having. And I'll also tell you that I personally called one of the owners because I wanted to know, you know, what he felt, and he was absolutely devastated. And I explained to him, look, I understand, you know, they've putting a lot of money in the facility, and they're starting where they all are, where the money is, and that's rehabilitation. And you can't do it all at once. What happened, they tell me they hired a new director of the facility, because the one that was there was promoted, and she's in charge of many of the nursing homes that this group owns. The new director has only been there for 3 months. Everybody in the family council had nothing but high praise for him and felt he needed time to be able to get, you know, address the staffing issues. And it's my understanding that there was 1 month when this all went down and that there was a shortage of nursing. And they contracted with three agencies who couldn't even provide them with the help they were looking for. So, you know, when somebody, because, you know, and truthfully, you can have a conversation with our own legislator who did staffing at Golden Hill. When you have individuals that call in 10 o'clock at night, an hour before their shift, and say, I won't be able to make it, oh, my car broke down, or this broke down, you're going to be short-staffed, and people are going to be hurt by it. So I can tell you that they're telling us, the family council, we were going to have a meeting ourselves with the new director and the past director, who now I forgot what her title is. And they are doing everything they can to address any problem that they have experiencing. But I've said many times in meetings, and I'll say here tonight, you talk to people maybe that go visit midnight, you know, or there. They have parents or loved ones there, and they're there morning, noon, and night. And unfortunately, it's 24/7 care. And also, we have a situation with social services now. With the new laws, you know, there's individuals can only be on social services unless you have little 2 or 3, 5 years old, I think it is, you know, for until they're 5. And you must go to work. And most all those people are directed into that profession because that's where the job is. But you know what? Unfortunately, and I say this publicly, they don't have the love of the job like nurses did years ago. They don't have that that commitment to what they do. I mean, years ago you would never have, you never heard of this problem too much. You might have had it. But I've been in a hospital when my brother was there. And there was no way you would ever leave him alone because you couldn't get a nurse because they're short-staffed. That's why this safe staffing law was so important. Because you have to put numbers to it. Otherwise, I don't care what this law is.
I just want to point out that the county no longer owns Golden Hill. You don't have to defend them like a county legislator.
I'm sorry?
No, same.
I'm defending them because I'm
there. Well, I understand that.
No, you don't. No,
I think that
you just made a veiled accusation.
No accusation.
I don't have to protect them because they're no longer owned by the county. I'm there on a regular basis. I take my position on family council very serious. And if there was a problem, I would be the first one to tell you. They took a 1 month in time that was people that would not identify themselves. One lady said, one person gave the press, my loved one was unattended for 23 hours. Can you give me a break? You wouldn't go to a charge nurse and say, nobody's taking care of my loved one? There's something wrong with you. You've got to listen to what the accusations are. Would you believe that?
Look, you have to listen to from both sides. I think that's the only way you can get
around it.
So these family council meetings are only open to family members and relatives, right? They're not open to the general public.
Yeah, right. No, anybody has a family member there.
Right.
Yeah. And has, you know, and they have a problem. I can tell you that it's the first 3 or 4 meetings. You know what, I guess did you go to the charge nurse? No. They wanted to talk to the director of the facility. You don't talk to the director of Phyllis facility. If you're concerned, you go to the charge nurse, you give her name, and you write it down. Here's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, they probably didn't know. What do they
have? That's common sense. Common sense is you have a loved one. I don't care if it's in the hospital or nursing home. And you have a problem, you go to the desk. You don't say, well, I'm going to try to get a meeting with the director.
Right. And believe me, the only reason why I brought this up is because it's health committee related, okay? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've got more knowledge on it than the general public because the general public saw 2 articles in the paper. One that they're not doing their jobs and they're not taking care of the patients. The other is that the administration said they're doing well above what the state requires them to do.
That's true.
Well, sure, but I think we have to be sensitive to both sides of the argument. That's what I'm trying to do is to figure out what's right and what's wrong. I do know for a fact that the state was called in after these allegations, and they're now in survey.
And that is not true. They were in survey. and the state happened to be there, and they just so happened, one of the council members went to visit her mother, and I won't give her name, and they called her in the room, and they said to her, we want to know what transpired at the meeting, and what do you hear? And they sat down, the state, that people that were there, told her they are doing their investigation, and they found nothing wrong. So it's very frustrating. It's frustrating to me because I look at it common sense. I had my two brothers and my mother there, and if I had a problem, I had to go talk to the nurse about it. I would say, oh my goodness, nobody came for 23 hours. Come on.
My point is not to degrade Golden Hill or to degrade the family council members who made the accusations, but just to talk about it and to let people know what's going on. Because apparently, Lynch Mayor Lynch didn't know anything about it. And you should
I read about it.
Okay.
Sometimes you meet people online, you get that phone thing going on. But we're meeting, I think, one day next week with the director and I, like I said, I don't know what the title now is, the one that used to be the director, they said the only thing they've seen is, because somebody did ask a question, well, why are some of the aides leaving? Well, unfortunately, sometimes they did the hiring and then they would find they didn't pass either drug tests or they had backgrounds that weren't conducive for being there, and sometimes some of them were fired on the spot for doing things that that was brought to their attention, and
that's personnel issues.
But it affects your staffing. That's the problem. So I would hope that the conversation I had was more toward what can you do to enhance benefits and salary to be able to maybe get those, that are really there, with the experience and would stay there. I think that's important too.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope they
I wouldn't know how, unless they make more money, they pay better salaries.
Benefits are very important. And that's why I think, as I understand, some of them are less just because of benefits. The other places paid a little more on the benefit than they do. And there's so many, we have so many, between the hospitals and nursing homes, there's so many places they could go, they can afford to move from,
And, it sounds to me like it was somewhat of a stage thing. They invited the press to come.
It was staged.
But if this would happen in another nursing home, Kemper Commons or Northeast Center, I'd ask the same questions.
I'm not trying to offend you.
I know you're on the family council and your family members have been there. My before I married my wife, she worked there.
She had a lot of experience there.
So I'm just concerned about the health care of everyone, not just Golden Hill. But if there was allegations of another one, I definitely want to bring it forward.
I don't always believe everything you read.
So my father was in a nursing home outside of Greene County for 100 days in 2012 and 2013, and I used to visit him 6 days a week, and I witnessed, there's a lot of things that go on in nursing homes, and it would be dependent and contingent upon the individual nursing home itself, but, I've always been an advocate. I brought it up in discussion in caucus when we were strategizing our platform, so to speak, before I was sworn in, that, it wouldn't be a bad idea, something on a macro level, to have some sort of mechanism through this committee where people could vent and report any types of issues.
They have the New York State.
Well, you're saying Department of Health, but the Department of Health is so understaffed, and the way the nursing home system is set up. I'm not talking specifically about but I'm talking about the facility that where I had experiences with, that you,
you're going to run into issues when your average investigator comes in from the Department of Health. The complaints have already been filed. You know, the relatives will be complaining within the nursing home facility. The nursing home knows that something's going to be coming down the pike. So they have time to get their records in order. And I'm not saying Golden Hill, but I'm saying that by the time an investigator comes in from the Department of Health, generally the brightest, the four most intelligent people running a nursing home are going to be brighter than your run-of-the-mill investigator that shows up from the Department of Health. So you're behind the eight ball already.
The only thing I say about this situation, and it's probably an incredible lucky thing that they just happen to be there doing their survey of Golden Hill when that story came out. You know, so I think that was a good thing. You know, so we'll just, you know, we'll stay on top of it. But, you know, if people are out to do more harm than good, there's not much you can do about that. When people stage things like this and, you know, are cowards, that you would give a quote to the paper and then ask them not to put your name in it, but the guy goes ahead and puts your name in it. Now it's a different story. You know, now she's like, oh, you know, that's not right either.
No, but we're not judge and jury, this committee. This committee is part of a fact-finding, legislating type of body. We can all have personal opinions on anything, and I respect yours. I just think you're right. You need to keep a close eye on it. I mean, if there is that kind of animosity where someone's actually going, and I'm not saying because I don't know. I mean, would someone actually lie just to get whatever bad press for this? Like, what would their motivation be? I think the motivation would be the care of their loved one. Mm-hmm. And they're probably highly charged and emotional. Well, that's only one person.
Well, she's the one that made the comment.
About her, no, there was a comment about a woman that 23 hours in bed, the bed was wet for 23 hours.
Can you imagine that?
You know, that's for her or whatever.
23
you know,
hours before she would tell her.
That's debating, I don't even know what she's
Well, first off, you know, these are private institutions, and they are controlled by the New York State Health Department. So it's nice if you want to discuss it, go visit. I think that's another good idea. We should do that sometime too. In fact, I made that recommendation quite some time ago, that we should even also be going to see our own mental health facilities. And we never made a visit to the social service department. I don't know that any of you ever know anybody over there or what they really do. We should be meeting with every single department. Here's what we do. I mean, we used to do that all the time.
Mm-hmm. I went there when we had the war check thing.
Yeah, all right.
No, I've been in there before. I mean, I used to work for the county. I've been in there.
I'm saying as a committee. You know, I'm going to talk to Greg. I think it would be a good idea if we do that.
One of the things, and I don't want to beat this, you know, beat a dead horse, but, and it's not sour grapes. Well, one of the things that I had asked for, the IDA, because the IDA did give a pilot to the Golden Hill, I guess it was called the Susquehanna Realty Company, whatever, $4 million pilot. And I went up before them during the public hearing, and I asked them to make a performance case. And I think that any healthcare facility should be on a performance-based pilot, if there would be any kind of pilot. And performance-based was the first year you get nothing. The second through the 15th year, you get 2% each year, as long as your surveys are good. And then from the 16th to the 25th year, you keep adding 2% to your backup to the regular tax thing. They all looked at me like I had three heads. And I'm like, well, what are we giving? But besides, we're putting it on the tax rolls. They already have the patients. They already have the services. They already have the staff, although the staff was reduced.
Mm-hmm.
what economic benefit? The only economic benefit was the tax, the property tax base. There was no other economic
benefit. Was that the place stayed open. Don't keep forgetting that the legislature okayed the sale of Golden Mills.
No, I'm not saying that.
And the place could have very well have closed. And I was on the LBC, and I traveled around to the people that wanted to purchase that facility. And let me tell you, you think you're sitting here talking about a couple little complaints? If you've seen some of the ones that applied to purchase that facility, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. So it should be thankful that at least somebody that's local, he's easy to reach. You could call him up, talk to him anytime you want. If the committee wants to leave it, I'll invite them to come here and talk to me.
So,
I'll invite them all to come here and talk. Let's invite them like we had the trauma center tonight, talking about the wonderful place it is and, you know, how wonderful it is. And we'll do that.
We take Golden Hill for $4 million in the
Did I hear you making a motion to adjourn?
Yeah, I wanted to make a motion, but I was going to beat him to it.
Well, he did make the motion. We did adjourn, but he just... No, he didn't.